Hello, everybody. Oh, we still have 1 minute. It's so funny. I can't even wait till the top of the hour. I'm so excited to talk with you, but we need to wait so that everyone's on the call. All right. I'll be back in a minute. All right. Here we are. 12 o'clock, and welcome to week 5 of the Amazing Career Project, and we are talking about the lessons your life is trying to teach you. I want to say to everyone, I have never had a group this amazing on the Facebook page, on the Facebook group. And I think it adds just such a critical, wonderful dimension. And I'm loving how all of you are, most of you are, sharing back after you read someone's post, and you're adding your thoughts and what you're struggling with and how you're making sense of it. So I just can't thank you enough, and thank you to Laura Neff too for her wonderful follow-ups and additional insights. But thank you. To me, it makes this program, this course for you, even more robust and more helpful, because you are talking about exactly how you are processing this information and what it means to you. So just thank you. Thank you again. All right, folks, I want to launch right into this. We are talking about the lessons your life is trying to teach you. And I know you already have some questions. Does anyone want to jump right in with an urgent question that you want to just get at right away? I will go and check the Q&A and make sure no one has submitted something. But I'm happy to do that if you have a burning question. Oh, yay, here's something. Hi, who's this?
Hi, Kathy, this is Natalia.
Oh, hi, Natalia. Oh, it's hard to hear you. Are you on a cell phone?
Yes, I am. I'm so sorry. Can you hear me now better?
Yeah, that sounds good. What's going on, okay, Natalia? Thanks for jumping in. What can I do?
Sure. Thank you so much for your guidance and for this program. It's been really amazing to hear you and to go through this process and to see everybody's stories too. My question really, yes, it's been really a pleasure. My question is a little bit three-pronged, but I'll try to keep it short. So in line with what you were saying about the lessons, working through this program and sort of committing to my own path, my life is already drastically changing. So, you know, as you may know, my relationship has ended. I decided to leave Europe, so I'll be packing next week. And the funny thing that just happened is that, you know, I've been in Europe for 2 years and no recruiters, nobody has ever responded to me. And all of a sudden, once I've made my choice to, you know, to move forward and to really create a new vision for myself, all of a sudden, you know, I have these recruiters calling me. I actually interviewed for a different position here in Europe. My question to you is, and you know, and this has actually happened in the past, funny enough, when I wanted to change track, all of a sudden I got sucked back in. So my question for you is, I have a second round interview coming up, and I really don't think I, you know, this is right for me, even though the job is really, you know, it's good. It's a, you know, it's a good company. But I feel like it's, you know, I've already committed to a certain path, you know, certain course of action. But, and I also don't want to lie to the recruiter and say, yes, 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 I want the job, and then just turn them down. So what do you think is the best way to handle that part?
All right.
What's your take? What's your take on this?
Yeah, what a great question. I have a number of things I want to throw out to you, and there's not a quick answer to this, but here it is. Number one, it's not random that you're having this stuff happen now. It is literally not random. It's because you're shifting. Your energy is shifting. Your mindset is shifting. It's nothing that's happening is random. So that's an incredibly good sign. Number two, and you should just embrace and give yourself a hug because you're creating this. Number two, without working with you privately, I don't know the answer to this. And you're not going to want to hear this, but sometimes we get fiercely committed to a direction and then something comes up that says, okay, wait a minute here. I think I have to rethink this direction. So I think it's possible that this new job opportunity is maybe presenting an opportunity to rethink your direction. Are you following me?
I am, but the thing is, this has happened in the past. When I first wanted to change my career, it's actually happened twice already. When I was committed to actually following my own vision, but I guess I wasn't as committed. And all of a sudden, right before I went for it, somebody else pulled me over to either their project or into another idea, and so I keep repeating the same cycle. So I appreciate your input, but I do think this is like a test. Like, you really want that.
And what is, just talk to me about what is the new vision for you? What are you committed to now?
Sure. So, you know, my career right now is in corporate finance. I'm a head of finance for a private group with a considerable amount of assets. But, you know, ever since I was young, I've been very interested in psychology, in lucid dreaming, in, like, magical practices, in body work. I did energy work since I was like 13 years old, and I really feel that the direction I need to be going, so the guidance I've received is that I'm supposed to be tending to the soul of the world. So whatever that means, and it's clarifying for me now. You know, I'm actually thinking a master's degree is in the future, possibly in transpersonal psychology, something to do with creativity and expression. I actually already am starting to work on my application, but I want to hold off on that just a little bit longer.
I love it. Beautiful. So do you feel that, so there's a transition period that's going to happen for you to do that? Do you feel you have to chuck your finance identity while you're in transition?
Exactly. The beauty of it is I work remotely 100% of the time.
Great.
So that's not something I want to let go of, not even for a Fortune 100 company.
And so this new job that you're interviewing for would not allow you that flexibility?
No, it would just allow me to, you know, it would have been perfect 2-3 years ago when I first moved to Europe and I was looking for an anchor here. But now that I've decided to leave, it's almost as if it's just like, okay, let's see, are you really committed this time, or can we trip you up one more time?
All right, so let me give you my final thoughts on this. I just watched Brené Brown on Super Soul Sunday, Oprah's Super Soul Sunday. You can find it online. And, you know, it's funny, so transparently speaking, I'm jealous of Brené Brown because I want to be Brené Brown. I want to get 22 million views. I want to do what she's doing. So I'm jealous, and my stomach's all in knots. And then I watch her, and damn it, if I don't learn 1,000 things. So she's talking about that neurobiologically, when things happen, our brains immediately tell us a story about what it is. And often the story is not right. The story is wrong. The story is not based in reality. So what I'm going to tell you is this. You have told yourself a story that, and the way you process it is, the universe is giving me a test. And I think that could, Natalia, could be very true, but it could not be true. And here's why. What I'd love to see you do is go for this job. And when you get it, tell them, I'm so thankful to get it. The offer is great. But in the last 4 weeks, this is what I've really seen that I need. I need a remote job that gives me great flexibility, that pays $200,000, whatever it is. Get the offer and then tell them what you want.
Okay.
And so don't see it as the universe is trying to trip me up. See it as, what a damn blessing that all of a sudden I'm getting recruiters calling right and left. I am going to work this so that it's exactly to my liking. When you get it to your liking, then you'll figure out what to do. What do you think?
You know, they've actually already pre-screened me for these things. They've already asked me, you know, can you come to Berlin? Or, is that not a possibility? Because that's a deal breaker for them already. So, and I feel like I kind of lied a little bit already, and I said, yes, yes, of course, but I, you know.
So where are you? Where do you want to go?
Hawaii.
And you have plans to do that?
Yep, I have my ticket booked. I have family that lives there, and I used to live in Hawaii. And it just resonates more with my vision of living in a lush, natural, clean environment.
Mm. And you have lived there and know that it's what you want.
Well, you know, right now with my current situation, I'm actually visioning the ability to live in Hawaii 3 to 6 months out of the year, then live in New York three months out of the year, and then maybe travel to Europe 3 months out of the year. Until I...
So, Natalia, the one, you know, I'm aware of our time, but the one thing I feel energetically that I just want to throw out to you, and I could be wrong, I adore your visions. I honor and validate your visions. And I don't want you to make the mistake that I made, that we have such strong future visions that we live in the reality of the future vision before we've created the right transition plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so let me give you an example. When I became a therapist, I, in my mind, saw that so clearly that in 3 months I'll be making $100,000 a year. Well, that doesn't work like that.
Yep.
It doesn't work like that. And the mm-hmm. regret that I have, and it is a true regret, is that I put all my eggs in that basket, not understanding the reality of, you're talking about a major transformation. And you've got it in you, absolutely.
I can keep my current job while I pursue the transformation. That's the beauty of where I am now. I don't need to, you know, quit my job.
So
to do this.
I see. I get it.
Yeah.
So you went, you said yes to that interview for what reason then?
Because they invited me.
All right. I'm with you. All right. We figured it out. Then I would be honest and say, you know, it's become abundantly clear since I filled out your, you know, application that really my life's dream is not to be in Europe. And if that is a deal breaker, you know, I'm really sorry, but I wanted you to know. I think that's fair. Thank you for working out all these things with me so I really understand your situation. Was that helpful at all?
Very, very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, my dear. Thank you so much. And listen, I love your vision. And why not? Why not you? Why not you live the life you want? Hawaii, other places, and making a difference with all of those aspects, psychology, energy. Yay! I love it! Thank you for sharing, Natalia.
Thank you, Kathy.
Okay, bye. Wow. So, you know, one thing that Natalia's story illustrates, I hope to all of you, there aren't just quick, easy answers to these issues. And that's why, gosh, it bothers me when I hear people, even on call-in shows, when, you know, it's a psychologist or whatever, they listen to one aspect of someone's life and they start giving them advice. I listened to this one woman on a radio station in my town, you know, in my area, and it bothers me because you can't really start advising till you've peeled the onion and really understand the person. Because often the person, not often, always, Natalia is an expert in her life, not me. So, you know, when you start thinking about these decisions, you do need to peel the layers so that you're down to the core of what you really want. Well, it's so exciting. All right. So let's go to what we want to talk about today. Go into the slides. All right, the lessons your life is trying to teach you. So the key takeaway today is life lessons abound, but are you learning them? And again, everything I talk about, I have lived the pain of not doing. And I want to tell you, I saw on Facebook, it was Julia, Natalia, and Wendy talking about critique, and I can't wait to jump in on that. But I'm going to be patient and go through the rest of the material and make sure we talk about that. But I want to talk about why we don't learn life's lessons. And 18 years of my life, I didn't learn my life's lessons. And not learning them makes you suffer, makes you ill, makes you not be successful, not make enough money, not have the impact you so desperately want, Or it makes you so blind to evidence that is coming your way that you actually should heed, that you hit your head against a brick wall and you bruise yourself. So let's talk about what I'm talking about. Why we do not learn the lessons our life is trying to teach us. There's several things. First of all, you're in denial. Now, a lot of people push back on this with me, and they say, you know, I'm a little confused. You know, I have this plan, like Natalia wanting to be, you know, want to work in psychology, body work, energy work, want to live in Hawaii. So they say, look, that's my plan. Nothing is going to deter me. This is what I believe the reality is. It's awesome to have a vision like that. But the hows of it are the business of the universe, not us. So often, and who was I reading years ago? She works with, you know, great artists. This was a therapist and kind of an energy worker. And there was an actor who was so mad that he went for this one role that it was perfect for him and it would have launched his career to the next level. And he didn't get it, and he was devastated. And she said, you didn't get it because there's something better for you waiting that you have no idea about. So, you know, to always be devastated at what the universe is delivering is wrong. Can I give you an example about that? I just finished my sixth Forbes post of this month. And I want to tell you, I just said to my husband, oh, my God, I love this Forbes writing as much as anything else I'm doing. I love this course equally, I have to say. But the Forbes writing, the fact that I get to interview people all over the world who are sharing, their books are amazing, their courses are amazing, and I get to choose. If I don't like what someone's doing or I think it's not messages that resonate with me, I don't publish it. You know, I get to choose, and I get to create series. Like today's was, I just created a new series, Today's True Leadership. Well, true leadership is very subjective. Yep, well, it's my subjective thoughts about what is amazingly powerful, transformative leadership. I am so overjoyed. Can I tell you, I never thought for a minute I would be a paid writer on Forbes. The universe gave me that in the most serendipitous, crazy way. So if we overly attach to the hows and we're in denial about what is coming our way, we don't learn the lessons we need to learn. The second part is making yourself wrong. Again, I use the example of when I was in my internship in therapy, I started to see, oh my gosh, I don't think I like this. But I made myself wrong. Come on, Kathy, what kind of healer are you that you don't like this? Don't be ridiculous. And you've spent $30,000 on a master's and you've worked so hard. What do you mean? I made myself wrong. If I had made myself right, I would have said, I need to take a weekend and think what the hell is going on here and what it means. But I was in denial that I didn't like it. And you know what happened? I launched a therapy practice with two other individuals. One individual left. Another partner came in. And there was a huge crisis within the practice. One of my partners did something so unethical, and the name of our therapy practice was Living in Harmony. And what he did in his personal life that became very public, that was so unethical, I decided I was going to leave the practice. I said to him, I want to meet with you. And he said, we can talk about this thing, but it's none of your business. And I said, there's where you're wrong. I'm your partner in Living in Harmony, Therapeutic Center. And what you've done is not living in harmony. And I'm sorry, it's not a personal matter. And he was a narcissist, and I didn't see it. And I left. I left that week. Why? I think the universe gives you stronger and stronger signs. But if you're in denial or make yourself wrong about them, you don't hear them. So a crisis has to happen. The third thing is you're attach too strongly to a particular outcome. Again, the hows, those cursed hows. It's not going to come exactly the way you see it. And I know this might be confusing to you because we talked also about when you visualize. And, you know, when I visualized my book, walking into Borders with my kids by my side, my son on my right and my daughter on my left, and that's exactly how it happened. Yes, it can happen the way you see it. But if there is evidence and information coming at you that you are too defensive or too attached to see it, you're not going to get where you want to go. And then the idea of assuming and projecting, and that's exactly what, and it's funny, I wrote this 2 years ago, but here's Brené Brown talking about, and it's about, it's from her book Rising Strong, which sounds amazing. I have to get it. And hopefully I'll get to interview her on Forbes finally. But here's a perfect example of what lessons I wasn't learning. I have wanted to interview her for 2 years. She's too busy. She rejects 95% of the speaking gigs, speaking offers she gets. But she finally, her PR person said she'll do it via email, and this was 2 years ago. And I didn't want to do it via email. I wanted to speak with her, and they said no. Now I do all my interviews via email. But I had the chance to interview my top role model in the world, and I was like, no, I've got to do it on the phone. Crazy. So I hope I'm giving you examples about how we assume, we project, we're overly defensive. I hope you can learn from my mistakes. So how do you open yourself to insight? So there's two critical things here. I'm 100% convinced that we all have a higher self. It's waiting there. It's a dimension of us that is so much higher, more elevated, wiser, not caught up in the weeds, not defensive, not emotional. It's a beautiful, beautiful dimension of who we are. But you've got to talk to it, and you have to access it. And you do that by being quiet. You don't do that by running on the hamster wheel every minute of the day. You do that by being quiet, and you do that, you know, in your meditation or asking your higher self. I literally do this. What am I meant to learn? I met with a friend yesterday, more of a professional colleague, and we got into a fight. Well, I would say this. She started screaming at me. And, you know, we worked it out. But I left the meeting and I said, okay, wow, what am I meant to learn from this? And usually I go to the place where, wow, I handled that wrong. I obviously made her so upset. But my higher self said, no, don't look at it that way. She's really not ready to hear what you said, and what you could have done differently is eased in a little more gently what you said. So instead of me being devastated, I saw my part in it, and you have to see your part in it. You have to learn what you're meant to learn. But that's not all about how you screwed it up. It's what do you need to do a little differently. And the video talks about start with the negative patterns that repeat, and I promise you, you're going to see your part in it if you allow yourself to walk into the critique. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Where you feel pain habitually, you need to look, too, at how old is this feeling. So often it's from childhood. We have a lot of trauma in childhood, we do, because we don't know how to protect ourselves. We don't know how to look at these things. We don't know how to make sense of them. And when our parents do things that hurt us, it's very scary, because when we're little, our parents are our security blanket. So when they are the ones doing things that hurt us, it's even more scary. So look at how you feel pain habitually and how old are these feelings, and then try to get some support. And you might need some therapeutic support, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm a big fan. I was talking to someone yesterday, having had 2 years of psychotherapy, spiritual psychotherapy, being the recipient of it, and then becoming a therapist, I'm like the biggest fan of therapy. You got to find the right therapist, but it's life-changing. And then number four, you need to move away from people who don't want you to be all you wish to be. You need to move away from them. And a lot of people have said, yeah, but they're in my family. They're my spouse. They're my sister. I get that. And you have to look at that. Sometimes we do outgrow the relationships we're in. But if you are, I can tell you this, if you're surrounded by people who want to keep you down and keep you where you are and keep you small and keep you suppressed, it really holds you back. All right, so five steps to learning what needs to be learned. So let's talk about being open to critique. So again, Julia, Natalia, Wendy, they were talking about, ow, that I don't want to. So I want to make a difference between critique and criticism. They're very, very, very different. Criticism, the way most of us look at it, is biting, harsh, it hurts. And, you know, they call it constructive criticism. I don't think that's the right phrase. I think it should be called constructive critique. I should even look at the definition of critique. I don't have it right this minute. But when I say critique, I don't mean harsh, stripping you down, beating you down. I mean the most loving insights from other people who know things, who you trust, who you respect, who you can be open-hearted with, who are able to say, here's, all right, let's say you want someone to critique your LinkedIn profile, or you've done a video that you want someone to critique, or a webinar. You know, when I first started, I've done hundreds of webinars now, hundreds of teleclasses, hundreds of radio shows. And in the beginning, I remember even the first time I was on television, or the first five times, I would wait 4 days before I could even look at it because I was so afraid. I'm not afraid anymore. And I've been critiqued. I've had PR people tell me, here's what you did well, here's what you didn't do so well. I've had PR agents of mine say, okay, this was great, this you might have wanted to do differently. And I even critique myself. You know, like, wow, okay, Kathy, you took way too long to say that, or you had too many ums and you touched her hair too many times. When you can open to it, it doesn't hurt you. It doesn't make you feel bruised. It makes you feel alive. Because and you need to choose your critiquers very, very well. People who are going to say it gently and kindly and who love you and, again, who see, I call it, the future vision of you before it's hatched and want to help you get there. All right? What else do we have to do to learn what needs to be learned? Yeah, part of this is you've got to let go of your inner narcissist. I have some narcissistic tendencies. I think everybody on the planet at some point or another does, where we think we know best. We think we're the expert. The problem with that is you're not letting in helpful feedback that is going to move you forward quick if you're a narcissist. And you get pretty vindictive and pretty upset if someone, you know, shares with you something they think is not great. And you know what I've noticed? The better you can do this, the more the critique is loving. The better you are at walking into it open-heartedly, and again, you don't have to catch every ball. If something comes at you, here's an example. Somehow I have something like 5,000, I don't know what I have, 4,000 connections on LinkedIn, direct number one connections, and I have something like 34,000 followers on LinkedIn. And I'm careful, even though that's an enormous amount, I look through every invitation and I select people. I say yes to people I think it's going to be enlivening to connect with, but every once in a while something gets through. And one guy got through, and he started to be horrible. I did a photo image that said, your words can be weapons or they can be beacons of light. Choose wisely. And he wrote something like, really? Wow. Something like, certainly not Einstein here. Come on. Well, that's not helpful. Okay, you don't think I'm Einstein. You know, that comment isn't helpful. I don't want you in my network. You know, you can privately there's no nice way to say that. I don't need that in my life. So I blocked him because I had shared another amazing article of a colleague of mine, and he said something really mean and trashing about it. I don't need that. So I blocked him. So you do need to know who your critiquers are. And don't let in people who just want to hurt. And there's a lot of those people. All right. Now, number four is you have to start identifying new choices and options. And I do think, back to what Natalia and I were talking about, that also involves looking at the stories you're telling yourself. Like, I need to be a coach, and that means I have to do 50 hours a week of one-on-one coaching. Well, that's not a helpful story. But I told myself that story for 2 years, and that's why I didn't make enough. And the universe was trying to tell me, you don't want to do that. But I told the story that that's what coaching is. instead of realizing, actually, I love to be a teacher even more. Now, don't get me wrong. I do love my private coaching, but it has to be limited. I can't do 50 hours a week of it. Then I get exhausted, drained, and resentful. I mean, this is just telling you the truth. So when I mix it up with writing and speaking and traveling and coaching and training, then I have this wonderful mix. So look at the stories you tell yourself. Are they limiting your choices? And then number five, be open to angels. And I want to talk a little bit about what I mean. So there are angels in your life. Let me give you an amazing example. And this is really exactly what we're talking about. And I think I talked about this earlier, too. I have been resistant to get into the coaching world and train coaches. And the reason is I've been really disappointed at how many people are coming out of the chute and hanging a shingle and saying they want to be a coach and they have no training, none. And that angers me. Why? Because I value training, because you have people in your lives that need you, and you need training to do this. So I see these people wanting to make a million overnight with their online coaching business, and I'm really disgusted, frankly. But that's a story I'm telling myself. And, you know, I think I mentioned this before, that I got an energy healing session around that. And what I realized was I want help. And it's in the form of the Red Cross, in that I had a vision with my energy healer. She had the vision that I was feeling like the women who are coming to me are like wounded, bloodied soldiers, and I'm on the battlefield of life. And I'm looking for, where is the Red Cross? I don't want to leave you. And the minute I had that energy healing session, I mean the minute I hung up the phone with Lynn Carroll, I had this incredible epiphany that I need to build the Red Cross. And I know this sounds kind of deep, but a week later, Laura Neff came into my life. So, and Laura is the wonderful ACP coach we have on our Facebook group, and she's there to support you. She's amazing. So when you tell new stories about yourself, and when you release the pain of those stories, angels come into your life. And I want to tell you, I never had angels in my life before. I was filled, my corporate career was filled with the opposite, demons. Well, and I don't mean this in a religious sense, but people who were backstabbing and horrible and throwing me under the bus and bosses. Ugh. And now that I'm open to angels, I literally see them everywhere. Now, the second dimension that I'm going to share with you, and if this woo-woos you out, you know, you can just tune this part out. But I took a class with Trudy Griswold years ago. I was trying to remember how many. It might be 10 years ago. Trudy Griswold is a spiritual counselor, and she lived very near me, and she doesn't any longer. But I took her course, and I had some private sessions with her about how to access my angels. And she has a wonderful book, angelspeak.com, and speak is with an E, angelspeak, SPEAKE.com. That's her website. And from my work with her, I access what I believe are my angels, and they have a name, Eleazar, which is amazing and serendipitous in a lot of different ways. But I speak to my angels every day. I don't write to them every day, but when I sit down at the computer and close my eyes and ask them questions, and certain things have to happen. I take 3 deep breaths, and I can tell when I'm a little too stressed out or too much caffeine that I'm blocking. I can tell when it's them. And you can say it's a higher dimension of me. We can talk about it any way we want. It doesn't matter to me. What matters is the information I get and the wisdom and the love. It doesn't feel like me. And if I ask a question, I mean, it just makes me cry. If I ask a question, they are so loving. And the love absolutely pours out. And you know what's really strange? If you watch the video again, the minute I say the word angels, there's light flooded in from outside. Look at it again. It's incredible. Now, if this is just too uncomfortable for you, I really respect that. I'm not telling you you have to write to angels. I was once fired from giving a series of workshops because I mentioned it. I understand this is uncomfortable for some people, but if you're interested, check out Angel Speak. Also, check out Lorna Byrne. I think it's, let me look right this minute, lornabyrne.com. Yep, BYRNE.com. I believe she's the real deal as well. If you're hankering for accessing angels and understanding them, those are great resources. And I know you're going to have questions. I hope so. So what do you need to ask yourself now? Here's some key questions. What have I been denying to myself that needs to be examined? I mean, when you ask this every week, you're not going to believe what comes, what you didn't realize was upsetting you. Like, you know, if I have a friend who's yelling at me in Starbucks, I don't think that's a friend, really. So I really need to look at that. And I need to look at why I'm not admitting that to myself. And these are hard things. These are hard things. And when you ask yourself, you yourself start peeling the layers. There's a lot of reasons why I don't want to look at that. Right? How have you made yourself wrong? And if you were right about everything you are thinking about your life and career, what would that mean? You know, another example for me is I got into, when I first started as a coach, I was a life coach and didn't like that. I wanted to be more specific, more of an expertise, and I became a career coach. And what started to happen as I wrote, I got offers to do very lucrative, you know, executive coaching. And I did it, and I didn't like it, where the company pays me. I prefer it when the individual pays me. But yet a lot of my friends were making tons of money, and I made myself wrong. Come on, Kathy, get over it. Why don't you like this? I don't like it because it puts you in the middle where the client really should leave that company, or there's something very wrong about that company usually, often. It's not the person. It's often the system, the systemic problem. But when the company is paying, you can't go back. They don't want to hear that often. I mean, very evolved companies do. So I made myself wrong for an entire year and had a lot of lucrative executive coaching gigs. Now I don't take them on very rare occasions where I feel it's right, but I make myself right now. If I hate it, I hate it. And what changes do you need to make yourself right? All right, there we go. That's it for today. Now, let's ask your questions. Please, please, please. I said a lot here, and I know you're having questions about this. And anyone, even if you already asked a question, that's okay. Let's get into this. Where are you needing to look at life lessons? Where are you confused? And, you know, it doesn't immediately come with clarity. All of these things I'm talking about are a practice that you build. You know, I just interviewed a woman yesterday on my Forbes blog. I hope you follow my Forbes blog. It's are you suffering from emotional obesity? Love this idea in that Laura Coe is the author of this new book. And she's saying that emotional obesity is when we have layers of beliefs in our lives that we haven't investigated, that we've just glommed onto, like layers of fat in our midsection that are preventing us from really coming forward. And, you know, I think that's a really helpful way to look at it. What are the beliefs that you've bought into, hook, line, and sinker, that need to be shed? What are the lessons you need to learn that your life is so desperately trying to teach you? All right, question time. Let me go to the Q&A and see if anyone has submitted anything. Nothing. All right, wow. So you know that I don't like to hang up these calls without answering your questions. So somebody's got to have a question here, whether it's about angels, whether it's I'm struggling with, is this a lesson I'm supposed to learn? Am I making myself wrong? Please, 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 let me see your hands raised. Press star 2 for that, or submit via online. All right? All right. Yeah, I got a question. Hello. Is this Nancy? Hello, hello.
Hello. Hi.
Oh, hi. Nancy?
How are you? Yeah. Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. Good. So, to your points about critique or criticism, I had learned something about myself. Maybe about a year back, I've been in my job a long time, and I do a lot of repetitive tasks, and I say a lot of things over and over again to a population of employees. And I found myself at a particular time of the year really hating something that I had to do. I had to send out 220 emails, and they had to be personalized, and I needed responses and a lot of follow-up, and I would really make a mess out of it sometimes because I would just be so angry with the repetition, I mean, 10 years of this. And then last year I said to myself, you know, maybe you're here doing this because you have something to learn about patience or, you know, arrogance or something like that. And so the next year that I did it, which was last year, I did it slowly and didn't frustrate myself and get all confused. And so this year I've employed those same tactics, and I feel like, well, okay, you learned that. Am I supposed to stay here? Am I supposed to stay in this job? Or am I still supposed to, you know, graduate or something like that? You know, like, you just said a moment ago, if I hate it, I hate it. But then sometimes we talk about not attaching to things and outcomes, and I think, well, this is your job that you know, and, you know, this is where all your equity is in, and maybe you're supposed to be here.
Let me give you some direction.
Okay.
If you hate your job, why do you need to stay in it?
I really am afraid that I'm never going to find what I want to do and that I don't have the courage to really make that change.
Well, there you just answered your question, Nancy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When your sentence starts with, I'm afraid, you have the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's just no clearer thing in the world. Yeah. You're afraid. You know, can I just share a few things about that? I don't think I mentioned this. When I was 20, I had a boyfriend, and he was very good to me, and he loved me, but I was not in love with him. And I told my dad, my beloved dad, who is one of my angels, I think, and he was a scientist. He wasn't a psychologist at all. But I said, Dad, I don't know what to do. I don't think, I'm afraid I will never find someone who will love me as much. And my beloved scientific dad said, if you are doing this because you're afraid, then you're settling, and I don't think you want to live your life settling.
Mm-hmm.
And no truer words have ever, ever, ever been spoken.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not supposed to stay in a job you hate, period.
Yeah.
And you're staying there because you're afraid. So how do get you out of being afraid?
Yeah, but then you talk about...
Have you interviewed Nancy? Have you interviewed?
Mm-hmm.
The very first step is get yourself the hell out there.
But I think to get out there would mean to get out there in this same field, and I don't even get an interview, and I don't want to lie anymore, you know, in an interview.
Are
like,
you sure it's the field? Is there no one in your field who loves it?
I think so because I struggle with the subject matter. I struggle with it.
What is it? What's the subject matter?
It's financial services compliance, and it's a lot of rules and regulations and things to keep on top of.
So what do you think you might want better?
Well, I think that the other day I had to attend a funeral, and it was done in the funeral home, and it was just a service there, not in a church. And I had just finished a 4-year program in theology for lay people that they could use if they wanted to go on and become a deacon in the Episcopal Church or but you didn't have to. It was just for my own enrichment. And I thought, you know, some of the skills about me that I think I possess. You know, I have a very calming nature, a calm voice, I'm very compassionate, and I really do dig this theological stuff. And I thought, well, maybe I could become an interfaith minister.
So let me tell you what I think about this.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard something similar to this 5,000 times. If you have done a 4-year program in theology, mm-hmm, and you love it, then what that means for 100% sure is you want to bring pieces of that forward in your life.
Yes.
It does not necessarily mean you want to be a minister. I had a client 3 months ago, exact same thing. She's in financial services in New York.
Mm-hmm.
She's a chief marketing officer in New York. Mm-hmm. And she's very involved in her interfaith, you know, church. And she said the same thing to me. Mm-hmm. And so we got on the path of, let's explore it. Do you really want to be a minister? And do you know what she did after what she learned? No, I don't want to become a full-time minister.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to get involved 4 different ways in my church.
Mm-hmm.
They have an amazing mission program. She wants to work on that. They have an amazing developing young women who are disadvantaged. She's now spearheading something there. You know, so there's 100% surety. I know that you want to bring pieces of that forward.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to do that. And I'm not telling you not to pursue being a deacon or an interfaith minister. I am saying, put your toe in the water so that you can live the identity of that life.
Mm-hmm.
And you will know very quickly,
mm-hmm,
is this something that's a side thing that I need to be happy, or is this really a professional direction? What do you have to earn, Nancy?
For money?
Yeah.
I guess I have to earn for New York, like $100,000 a year at least. That's what I have to earn.
For everyone on this call, I want you to know what you have to earn, not guess. I want you to get incredibly – I can't tell you how many women don't know the answer to this question. And number 2, again, we tell ourselves stories. You know, I live in Wilton, Connecticut. You need a lot of money to live here. And that's why soon, you know, we're moving, because my kids are out of school and I'm ready to move. Not because of the money only. I'm happier other places. But you said, I don't know. In New York, probably $100,000. So do you know with 100% surety you want to be in New York?
I talk about not being here, but I've complicated my life by becoming involved with someone who lives in this region. And
so Nancy, I bet everyone else can hear it too.
Yeah.
Your energy is not your energy, your voice. It's beleaguered.
Yeah, I'm beleaguered. Yeah.
You're beleaguered, and you're beleaguered by the way you've complicated your life.
Mm-hmm.
You have a job you hate in a field you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $100,000 is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't need to be living in New York City.
Mm-hmm. I know. There are a lot of issues. I live with my sister, and we're partners together. And I don't think she wants to leave. Partners in housing together, you know, and I'm the one who has the friend who is gravely ill, and although I'm not involved in it right now because she's in the hospital, it's just constant medical crisis. I don't know if she's going to pull through or not, so I guess in a couple of weeks, we'll know. I know this is a lot to put out there, but...
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
We talked about this in session 1, I think, week 1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your role in life seems to be the fixer, the savior.
Yeah.
Kind of like a martyr, maybe. That's a negative term, but, you know, I don't feel that all of these roles are what you want. I feel that many of these roles are what you feel you have to do. Am I right?
Well, I have felt that way. I have moved out of that, if you could believe it or not. It's just that sometimes this person, you know, my friend gets sick and it's sad, you know, and today I'm sad about that. I've made enormous strides with this situation and not calling so much, not volunteering for the things that she might need, stepping back, seeing who else shows up, sometimes keeping my mouth shut when a request comes out.
Yes,
I have made a lot of strides in that area.
Beautiful.
I did want a boyfriend in my life. I after 5 years of not having one, I went out there, I put myself out there, and I got one, and he's kind of a miracle in many ways.
Mm.
So it's maybe I should have waited longer. I don't know, but in the meantime,
here's what I would love you to do. It's not easy. But I'd love you to take, you know, maybe over the Thanksgiving break, go somewhere by yourself for 2 hours and take a journal with you and write down everything you are engaged in and ask your heart, do I really want this? Not the should, not what you think you have to, do I want this? So when you're thinking about New York, what you immediately said was, I live with my sister, and we're partners in housing. That isn't anything about what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might have spent a lot of time creating these things and thinking they were positive.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, how old are you now, Nancy?
50.
Yeah, we changed. 50 is a big year. When I became 50, I was like, ooh, I'm a member of a new club. And the new club, you have a very different vision in life than you did at 35 or 40, I feel. I do.
Mm-hmm.
Will you please do that for me? Will you?
Yes, I will. I absolutely
allow
will.
Allow yourself to say, forget what I should and what I'm afraid of. What do I want? Will you let us know what you come up with?
Okay. I will. I
hope that's
will.
Helpful, Nancy. Thank
it is.
You.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Who else has a question? How can I help you? Please, 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 raise your hand, star 2, and let me look at the Q&As. I'm sorry, I always have to go to, I got a lot of questions here. Wonderful. All right, let's go to Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Question. Question regarding knowing how much money you need to live. Are you talking about figuring out how much you need to pay your bills while you figure out what you want to do? Are you talking more about figuring out what you are capable of making, meaning getting more comfortable with the idea that you can and deserve to make a comfortable living? Oof. Sarah, fantastic question. It's all of those things, but the very first thing we have to do is right this minute become intimately familiar with your financial situation as it is in this moment. I want to tell you, I am one that remains in denial, and I have to work really hard. I mean, I just had something happen with my taxes. I'm self-employed, and I'm supposed to be paying quarterly taxes. I don't do it, but now my accountant and I, she's sitting with me setting me up on the electronic payment processing system for the federal government. When we are in denial, when we don't want to look at our, like, for instance, I'm with Wells Fargo, and I look at my online scenario 3 times a day. I know to the penny what is coming in and what is going out, and I have to do that for my business. And I do my own accounting. I don't send it to someone else. But when I used to, you know, have direct deposit, I didn't know what was in my account, what's coming, what's going. I didn't know the answer to how much money do I have, what is going on with my money, and if you ask me how much do I have to earn, I gave you what my salary was, which at that time was $150,000 with, you know, 30% bonus and a lot of benefits. That's not what I have to earn. That's what I think I have to earn based on the life I created for myself. So, number one, I am talking about becoming intimately familiar with your money. What is coming in, what is going out, how much you have in savings, what you want to do with it. I think everyone should have a financial consultant. Everyone needs a great accountant, whether you do your taxes or not, yourself. You need to get comfortable. And really, and so many women are not. That's number one. Number two, you ask, are you talking about figuring out what you're capable of making? I really believe that what we need to figure out first is what we deeply want to do in life. I think I just shared somewhere on social media a little photo image that said we should be asking our children not what do you want to do for a living, you know, our college kids, but what problem do you want to solve? Oh, love it. I would rather you focus on what problem do I want to solve in the world? What do I want to do with my heart, with my spirit, with my talents, with my gifts? And then you can monetize that and leverage that. But I really believe that, and you tell me, we can talk about this, but I believe that for you right now to sit and think about, you know, what can I make doing work I love, if you haven't really even figured out what you want, that's a stretch and that's, I think, a bit of a waste of time. You're going to be able to make a comfortable living. Everyone can make a comfortable living doing what they love. They just need to figure out how to leverage it, how to market it, how to talk about it. But I don't even think it's a question. But if you do not feel comfortable with the idea that you can and that you deserve to, yeah, that's work that needs to be done. I hope that answers the question. And I really believe this program is helping you. I hope you tell me that every person on the planet deserves to make a comfortable living doing work they love because they are using themselves in service of the world. In service of someone else. So there we go. That's a fantastic question. Thank you so much. Ask me more if I haven't answered it well. And we've got Maggie. Hey, Maggie. Thank you so much. Maggie's in South Carolina. So Maggie says, I know my biggest struggle with criticism is that while my brain knows that people aren't coming to me with their criticism from a malicious place, but anytime someone comes to me with constructive criticisms, my emotions take over and I feel defensive and I shut down. What do you recommend as my first step? Oh, thank you for being honest. And I think we're all nodding our heads in agreement. I think the vast majority of people don't know how to do this. So here's some steps. First, you got to peel the onion. Where do you think that came from? I mean, when I look at my life, I got critiqued and it hurt. And the people that gave me critique really were not clear energetically. They were hurting me. And I'm not going to say who it is, but I had a person in my life, you know, I was kind of a star in high school in that I was number one on the tennis team and I was a writer and I was in the shows and the plays and theater. And I remember after one of the shows, a family member said, "You're getting too big for your britches." And I don't like it. That hurts when you're a kid. So was that constructive criticism? No. She thought it was, but it wasn't. It was, she didn't like seeing me shine. I mean, that's what it was. So what I'm asking you to do is go back. Look at your childhood. Look at your life back. Did you learn that feedback from your family actually hurts? And was it meant well? I mean, a lot of people are not evolved. They hurt you with their words, and they don't want to see you thrive and shine because it threatens them. So the very first step is look at what you learned, and then some healing is required. Once you see where it came from, and it came from somewhere, we don't pop out of the womb hating constructive criticism. then you need a little healing, and you can try it yourself. You know, if I was a little child and my mother hurt me, you know, forgiveness, understanding that human beings are flawed, we're not perfect. Our spirits are perfect, but in the process of becoming human, they don't get perfect. And try some healing. And then see if you can find someone in your life who you love and respect, who's gentle, who's coming from the right place. And ask for some constructive criticism and bring your whole heart to it. And see if that works, so that you have a model for how it works, to ask for it and then receive it and then process it and make use of it. And once you start giving yourself a model for how it can work well, you can break the habit of feeling so hurt and defensive. Wow, fantastic question, Maggie. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Let me go back to if anyone's raising their hand. Star 2. Don't be shy. Oh, my gosh, it's 1 o'clock already. Holy cow. All right, let me answer one more question. Natalia, let me take your question. Last one, Natalia says, Natalia here again. Feel free to pass for other questions. Oh, no, I don't want to pass. Here you are. So I am very clear that there is a road ahead and it won't be tomorrow or even next year. I am strongly interested in a master's program and have looked at it for years now, but I'm actually in the position to do it in financial terms, yay, and flexibility. I am itching to apply as I believe it would provide me with the skills, confidence, and network to move forward. Do you recommend I wait for this ACP process to be over, or is it okay to apply now? It wouldn't start. So I want to look, thank you for that question. I want you to look at the language you use. Is it okay? Is it okay is asking me permission. You don't need to ask permission. If you are hankering to do this and you believe with all your heart it's the right thing, then it's the right thing. I would ask you to think about, is there any remnant of doubt in your mind? If there's a remnant of doubt, bring it forward. Do a critique on that doubt. What are you afraid of? If you're afraid, if there's courage that's lacking only, then muster the courage. If there's something else, though, look at it. Don't be in denial. And if there's doubt that's legitimate, and you can ask someone else who you think really knows, you can get a little critique on this. If there's something that worries you, let me just share this. When I got laid off the month after 9/11, and then I'm in my therapist's office and we said, let's look into therapy for you. As a therapist, you might be great. I wanted to enroll immediately. And January, when I enrolled, was too late. I couldn't matriculate into the master's program. But what I could do is take one, two, or three courses, up to three courses, and see if I liked it. And that's what I did. I jumped in January, took three courses. I wasn't enrolled in the master's program yet. But it taught me what it's like to go to this school. Am I going to love being in a class? Am I going to love it? And I adored it, and I enrolled and got in. So you can also do that. If most schools allow that, take the course, you know, and not matriculate right then. But I would ask you to ask yourself, is there any remaining doubt? And you do not need permission. And absolutely, if something feels really 100% right, then you go for it. Oh, thanks, everybody. These are beautiful questions. I hope I'm helpful. Please, please, please continue to share on Facebook. Share what's hard. Share the wins. Like Nancy said, you know, you're having wins. You're really making progress. Share that, too, because it's very inspirational for other people. Now, I want to remind you, we don't meet next week. You guys are off. You ladies are off, and so am I, because we're going to have a wonderful Thanksgiving for those of you who celebrate it. Take the time to be thankful for who you are. You're amazing and brilliant and beautiful and giving and so many things, and you do deserve to have the life you dream of. Gratitude, that's the theme for next week, gratitude for yourself and what you've already created and for being here. Thank you. And so we meet again for week 6 on December 3rd, Thursday. Have a wonderful week off. I'll miss you all. and see you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you.
The moderator has left the conference.